Hey listeners, if you're working on a manuscript, we'd love to help. Email us about our novel mentorship program at napleswritersworkshop@gmail.com. Welcome to Why Is This Good, a podcast by the Naples Writers Workshop. I'm Christine and I'm here with John. Hey, John.
Hello.
Okay, it's my turn. And I picked a story called At the Clinic by Sally Rooney. It first appeared in the White Review in 2016. And it's the same characters that would later appear in her book, Normal People, in 2018. So it's Marianne and Connell. On the way to the dental clinic, they talk about going home for Christmas. It's November, and Marianne is having a wisdom tooth removed. Connell is driving her to the clinic because he's her only friend with a car, and also the only person in whom she confides about distasteful medical conditions like impacted teeth. He sometimes drives her to the doctor's office when she needs antibiotics for urinary tract infections, which is often. They are 23. Connell parks up around the corner from the clinic, and the radio switches itself off. He has taken the morning off work to drive Marianne to the appointment, which he hasn't told her. He's doing it partly out of guilt. A week previously, Marianne gave him head in his apartment and complained afterwards that her jaw hurt. And he was like, "Do you have to complain about everything all the time?" Then they argued. They were both a little drunk. Marianne remembers the incident differently. She remembers giving Connell head for a while on his sofa, and then she stopped because her mouth hurt. He was pretty nice about it, and they had sex on his couch instead. Only afterwards, when she started talking about her mouth again, did Connell say, "You complain a lot more than other people." They were lying side by side on the sofa then. Marianne said, "You mean your other girlfriend?" And Connell said, no, he meant people as in everyone. He said no one he knew in any capacity complained as much as Marianne. "You don't like hearing people complain because you're incapable of expressing sympathy," Marianne said. "I already told you I was sorry the first time you complained. You like women who don't complain because you don't want to see women as fully human. Every time I criticize you, it turns into a thing about me hating women," he said. Marianne started to sit up then. She gathered her hair into a roll and felt for a clip to put through it. "I find it suspicious," she said, "that you always get into relationship with people you don't actually talk to. You're upset and you're taking it out on me now," he said. "I'm not completely stupid." She touched her hair with her hands to feel that it was in place and then lay back down beside him. It was a bad sofa with a pattern of brown flowers. "Me," she said, "you see me as a full human being. That's why you're not attracted to me." "Yes, I am. Sexually, but not romantically." She watched him looking up at the ceiling then. Their faces were very close together. "I guess if it was romantic, I wouldn't like you having other boyfriends," he said. "Although actually you don't. I don't like your taste in boyfriends. That's different." "Do you want to know what happened with Daniel?" she said. "I told him I had a dream about getting married, and he said, to me? And I said, no, to my friend Connell. The rest of the argument wasn't about you. It was about how I say things purposely to bother him because I enjoy making him feel bad about himself." Oh. That was a long section, and it's because I feel like this story just kind of rolls from one scene to the next, and it's kind of hard to just grab what feels like a section. It's why, yeah, I had to start at the beginning.
So when I first read this, I was like, wait, are these first two paragraphs, do they have the same structure? That was my...
Yeah, with the final lines and...
Yeah, well, it starts off by setting the scene, and then it kind of dips into what brings them there, and then it ends with like a comment, of like an explanatory description. Like, first one's on the way to the dental clinic, they talk about going home for Christmas. And then, why are they going here? It's November, wisdom tooth removed. Connell is driving her. He sometimes drives her to the doctor's office when she needs antibiotics. They are 23. And that's how it ends.
Yes.
And then the second one is back to the scene. Connell parks up around the corner, and then it's kind of the background. He's taken the morning off. He's doing it partly out of guilt. And then it sets up a week previously. Marianne had given him head in his apartment, complained. Then they argued. And then the last line, they were both a little drunk. It's like that kind of like explanation thing. But it's two introductions to the two main things about the story, which is the dental visit and the memory of what happened with that argument that started.
Right.
Which are the two threads that are going to be snaked through this thing. So I think this is part of why that effect you're talking about. It starts right at the beginning. We're going to have two threads. They're just going to tangle up onto each other, twine together. So we start with two basically parallel introductions to those two threads. And then it just goes, like you said, which is really interesting. Because the other thing this does is it'll explain her point of view and it'll explain his
yes.
point of view. And it goes back and forth between them. Like, when it's appropriate that we need to know what her motivations or her feelings are, it'll tell us. When it's appropriate for us to know what his feelings and his motivations are, it'll tell us. And that's another twining element to this. All of it's just pushing us forward.
This was a book in 2018 that super popular, and then it got made into a TV show. And then I read the book only this past year. So I watched the show first, and what you're talking about with like the switching of perspectives and the similar threads. This is the short story. It just introduces the character. The scene's not in the book or the show, but the overall storytelling is done the same way. And it's most apparent that we're essentially like head hopping, right? Or like changing perspectives when you watch the TV show, because there's scenes with just one character. It's like, okay, now we're going to follow Marianne at a day at school. Now we're going to follow Connell. And hearing you describe it now as setting up two threads, like I had to like leaf through quickly because you kind of forget that that's what's happening. Like I wouldn't describe this as a story that offers both of those characters' insights necessarily. Mm. I'm not like thinking about it that way. No, I'm just like along for the ride. And there's also something it's kind of touched on here, but the story about these two characters is that they fall madly in love in high school, but there's like a class difference and there's a basically like Connell's poor but popular and she's extremely rich, but everyone hates her and she's really smart. Yeah. And she's also like being abused at home, but Connell, despite being brought up like in worse off circumstances, quote unquote, he has self-confidence. He feels loved by his family. You know what I mean? So there's all these like differences, but the whole time the story is about how, even though like he has a sentence at one point where he says like, I feel like you're made perfectly for me, Marianne, but they don't end up together. The story kind of touches on all the times that they date and then they date other people and then they come back together. And then there's moments like this short story that we're reading where they're hanging out, but he's got a girlfriend, she's got a boyfriend, like what's going on? They seem so completely for each other that it doesn't feel like two different perspectives at play. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes you read a story like, I'm thinking of like a book like Twilight, like young love, and these people are madly in love with each other. Yeah, garbage reference, I know, John. John's like, I don't read Twilight.
I will not get the reference.
Well, it's like star-crossed high school lovers, right? He's a vampire and she's a normal human. They're like, this can't be. And so like a lot of times, like what they're describing and what you're experiencing as the reader are two completely different takes on what this love story is. And here it feels like they're very much on the same page. So even when they divert and you're hearing each of their internal thoughts, it feels like the only appropriate storytelling method to sort of show us how they're each internalizing it, because they're not that far off. And because the story is about them being like, in certain ways, like clones of each other, right? They fully understand each other in a lot of ways.
I wrote a story that does that a few years ago where it was two characters and I realized that I needed to get into the heads of each of them. So okay. I did the similar thing. The first paragraph, I put his head, like some thoughts that he was having. And the second paragraph, put some thoughts that she was having. So then I had set up the rule so that throughout the whole thing, you can flip back and forth. Because what the story was about was the thing between them, right?
Yes.
And so we have to look at it from this point of view and we have to look at it from this point of view. And it's the changing and development of whatever is happening. Like how she feels about it and how he feels about it are part of it. So you need to have those two alternate perspectives. And I feel like this does a similar thing where, like you said, they're mostly aligned, but there's a reason we're seeing his thoughts and her thoughts. They don't quite connect all the time. So when it's important for us to notice the distinctions, then we get them. I mean, I didn't read the book. I didn't see the show, whatever that was. But in this story, I feel like it's like you want them to recognize the thing between them. And you know that neither of them fully does. Because they have separate perspectives, we get a sense of the full thing. And we root for the full thing. And we have feelings about the full thing because that's what the story is. It's about the full, complete picture. But neither of them get that full thing because they have their own perspectives on it.
Yeah, their own perspectives and like they're not sharing them with each other. So even though they are close, right? Yeah. They'll have these moments of honesty throughout the novel and even here where you think, oh, they're almost gonna just kind of put their swords down and just, you know, be together. They want to be together. Whatever it is that's keeping them apart, like they're stubborn or young or they just keep missing each other. Like we have the full picture, like you said, and if they were just honest with each other, they'd realize they lined up. But this is almost like a study in the types of good dialogue that we've talked about, right? Where they're having what seems to be an honest conversation with each other, but there's so much more going on under the surface. And that's like where the real connect or disconnect is happening.
I mean, because she writes it in this interesting way where there's no dialogue, like quotation marks, and you're almost always know when someone's speaking and when they're not, because I think it's the reason you know is because it's embedded in perspective. This isn't something the in-between narrator would say. This is something that has to be ascribed to one of the characters. years, and it has to be ascribed to them speaking it out loud. But there was one moment where
you weren't sure.
I wasn't sure. And she's like talking about some sort of breakup. I guess Connell has broken up with Lauren, and he never told her, never told Marianne that that breakup happened. So he's like, "Yeah, I thought you would have heard," he says. "It was one of these Skype breakups, relatively relaxed as breakups go." And then the next paragraph, "Lauren's a relaxed girl." It's obviously Marianne speaking. And then the next paragraph, "That's probably true." He looks out the window and attempts to yawn. I'm not sure he said that out loud. But it doesn't matter, like what you're saying, it doesn't quite matter whether we know he said it out loud or not. Number one, it doesn't add information to their conversation. And she can tell that he's agreeing with her even if he doesn't verbalize it.
Yeah.
But it's like slippery in that way.
That's like what fans of this book enjoy too, is like...
stumbling on all the topical things.
Well, just like the thinking that you understand one another and then kind of realizing that, oh, it didn't work out. Like as a reader, you just want them to be together so badly, and you see it so clearly. It just seems perfect, but they can't help but either have these misunderstandings or moments like that where it's like, well, I think they understand each other, but then in the next paragraph they're arguing about something else and you're like, oh, maybe not. But that's sort of like, I don't know, maybe someone would disagree. I think that's like the joy of reading stories like this, where it's like you kind of know better than to think that it's gonna work out, and it's the pining that you're enjoying. You know, this feels like it is like a literary fiction, but like romance for, I don't know, this would have been Jane Eyre a long time ago. You know what I mean? The whole joy is like the, it's probably not going to happen, but I'm going to obsess over it.
Because that's what the story is, like we were talking about the perspective. The story is about the connection. It's about what's between them. It's not about either one of them. So that's what we're going to, as a reader. When I got to the end of this story, I was like, is this a story where I'm feeling an emotion that neither character is feeling? Like the story has somehow brought me to an emotional place. Like a feeling.
Why am I more scarred? Yeah.
I'm not empathizing with one of the characters. I'm empathizing with the whole,
yes,
like entangled threads.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't come away from this thinking like that there is a hero or an anti-hero. There's not one person's desires that you're hoping for. You just want them to be together.
Why can't they make it work?
Yeah, why can't they make it work? And then, like you said, all of this comes down to the fact that it's a story about what's between them. Like, he's talking about how he broke up with his girlfriend, but he's only really thinking about it while he's around Marianne. We don't see what it's actually been like for him to like recover from the breakup. We don't even really like fully see the breakup in scene. It only exists in relation to Marianne. And so it makes this story seem, you know, the plot is that she needs a ride to the dentist office, but really the story is just about how they're constantly relating everything that's happening to themselves back to each other. And it's only real or important when they're sitting next to each other. And I think she kind of captures it with that opening conversation where she's like, you don't view women as like full people. And then he admits later in the story, like that he does sort of see them as these bit parts in his life. And the main character is him and the supporting actress is her. And so of course we're only going to see these scenes where they're together because everything else is secondary.
I do like, because like I said recently in a recent episode, perspective is everything. I think perspective is the foundation of any story, is figuring out what its perspective is, whether it's the writer's perspective or whether it's a narrator's perspective, a character's perspective.
Right.
Wherever the story is coming from dictates how it's told. And because this story seems to be coming from their relationship, it's a story about their relationship, then that is the perspective. It needs to dive into each of them. That is an appropriate way to do it.
Yeah. Like I think about any time I've ever read an adventure story and I'm giving advice like, well, show these characters eating, show them setting up camp, show, you know what I mean? Like the hobbits weren't walking the whole time. Yeah. But the most interesting part is when they are walking and talking. It's not when they're necessarily like setting up camp unless something horrible happens when they're setting up camp.
Well, Tolkien is famous for his landscape descriptions, so, you know.
Yes. So there are those things. But then like when you watch the movie, it's like, you know, we're just getting down to the good stuff. Anyway, it's my inkling as a writer, especially to think, well, I have to show what's happening to these characters outside of this core problem. You know, I can't simply write a book where all they're thinking about is the main point of the story, because it's not realistic, first of all, that a character would know that they're in a story, right? I'm supposed to just like be writing about something that happened and then making it seem realistic. Like, oh, this character's trying to live life, but this other thing is happening to them. And then you read a story like this one and you're like, wait a second, I guess you're allowed to just skip to the good parts. Like, nobody wants to read that other other stuff unless it does relate to this overarching problem. And like seeing this structure, it's like kind of like giving yourself permission to just do the good stuff. Like, why do I want to hear about them driving to the dentist appointment? I don't. I want to see them sitting in the waiting room next to each other, you know? Why do I want to see the breakup in real time in Zoom? I don't care, except that I want her to hear it. I want to know what she thinks about the breakup. So we're just going to get that part.
Yeah, that's a good, because what I was saying before about a story is at heart its own perspective. And in order to tell the story that it is, you have to adhere to the story's own perspective. And it has to be about that. Because if there's something, if you can cut out a thing because it's not quite what the story is, then yeah, don't need it.
I don't know how to capture like the way that this is written, but there's something like sort of like stark about the word choice, and it's just sort of like spare language, but I think it's still like pretty emotional.
Well, I mean, I glance down at the page and it says, "Let's get in the car," he says. In the car, she's small and lonely. Like, that's stark and emotional. Yeah. So
yeah, it's not super flowery, but it is literary. I think sometimes people think like it's got to read with big words and long sentences and sweeping sentiments. Okay, I want to read this section with just a paragraph about her and the dentist chair. It says the dentist packs Marianne's mouth.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I just think it's a good example of this. The dentist packs Marianne's mouth with gauze and gets her to bite down. She's feeling woozy as though the tooth is a sick child she has given birth to. She remembers that Connell's in the waiting room and feels a tidal gratitude, which drenches her in sweat. The gauze rubs her numb tongue and her eyes begin to prick with tears. The medical part of the procedure is over now. They scoop her out of the chair as if she's a piece of newspaper.
Yeah.
That's the kind of language that I feel like is there throughout. We're seeing her by herself in this chair. She's thinking about Connell in the waiting room. She's in physical pain, and they're telling you about the procedure, but they're also just like telling you everything that's going on with her emotionally without saying she was sad, she was scared. Did you like that section? You've acted like you recognized it.
Oh, that whole part, the procedure and the previous paragraph, because there's like when she actually gets the tooth and it falls out and they're like,
yes,
let it out, or that was really well executed. And then that part, the scooping out like a newspaper, I remember stopping on that line. It's like, that's so right, but so what is that?
Yeah, she's just like fragile, I guess, but it makes sense.
Yeah,
I feel like this story is just full of that kind of writing. Like, I love this last line. They're having this emotional conversation in the car, and he says, "You're still crying, are you?" he says, and she said, "The feeling is coming back now, that's all." And I wonder, with short stories like this and stories in general, like, that seems like the kind of line that you either have envisioned early on or from the start, or one that you stumble on as a writer.
Oh, it's gonna be at a dentist because they numb you.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
It's either that, which would make me feel better, or it's like that the writer is just coming up with this like on the fly and going, yeah, that's good. Like, whatever it is, there's a double meaning, obviously, but it's also the perfect double. Like, I hate pithy endings. I hate endings of short stories where someone says something clever, and I'm like, do you really want me to finish your story with a chuckle, or do you want me to have some kind of lingering feeling about the overall point of why I've read this? And this, I think, is a really good example of something that's clever, but the cleverness is not the point. The cleverness is icing on the cake, and it makes this piece of dialogue louder, and it makes it ring more true, but it's a bonus that it's clever that way.
The story Foster had a similar kind of last line, similarly
both Irish
double
writers.
Mean, but yeah, I can see this as being something that emerges naturally, because it's either that or you planned for it with such care that she was very deliberately setting up the numbness and the coming out of the numbness so that she can get to that line. Whether that's a discovery in drafting or a discovery in thinking about the story, like planning the story before you even start writing it, it's something that definitely you can come to through the process.
Yeah.
But I thought you were going to talk about the ending where it ends on both of them, because the last two big paragraphs before those two lines of dialogue is like his thoughts about her and then her thoughts about him in that moment in the car. It's like the only reason they're separated into paragraphs is because it's two different things, but it's like the exact same moment they're kind of thinking about each other.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what gives that sense of, that's part of what gives that sense of hopefulness at the end.
Oh, like, yeah.
This
yeah.
thing between them is on both of their minds.
Yeah, and I would argue, to reference the book, that's in keeping with the whole arc. It's very rare that they're ever like somewhere else. And when they are somewhere else in their head than with each other, that's what spells disaster. That's like more of a plot point than anything that's actually happening. When they're not thinking about one another is when you're like, oh shit, he's not totally in it right now. He doesn't love her. They're gonna break up. Yeah, that's a good catch. I think I was reading about Sally Rooney, I think like her new book or something, and then read that she had originally introduced these characters in a short story. And I also thought that that was a really interesting sort of aspect of all of this. And I'm sure it happens more often than we realize. And maybe it's because it's not every time that a writer comes up with a character that they like that the short story even gets published. Like maybe they've always experimented with certain people. Like, oh, I read a book by William Somerset Maugham this year. It's called like Cakes and Ale. And he talked about how the premise of the novel came because he always wanted to write this particular character that he had kind of like thought about extensively. And I think she might have appeared in other books anyway. So maybe I know there's cases like that all the time, but it's like sometimes you're surprised to learn that the writer would have had that character anywhere else. And it's because you haven't seen it. And this time it was like, these characters have also been published in a short story. And I was like, that's so interesting. And it's also just a good, I don't know that I have a takeaway other than this really, because I think it's hard to sort of mimic her writing style, but you can totally use your same characters over and over. If you've ever written characters that you just like, you can use them again. They can do other things. It doesn't have to be connected.
There's whole the James Bond series, you know.
like you were saying.
I mean, like James Joyce, his books are so different. Portrait, Ulysses, Finnegan's Wake, Dubliners, but the same characters inhabit all of them. Stephen Dedalus is like his guy.
One way you can think about it too is not just that you're capitalizing on something that's worked for you, because I think I'm sort of guilty of that. If I've ever written something that people enjoyed and I think I gotta do that again, like you were saying with James Bond, like sometimes, you know, you're just getting the same story and over and over because people don't want to reinvent the wheel. They just want to do what works repeatedly. But in some ways it's not that. Like in some ways, if you as a writer feel like you're constantly thinking about revisiting a certain character or you're just sort of fixated on it, it doesn't mean that you're just doing this one trick pony thing. It could be that there's something like unresolved there, or the characters, there's something left for them to do. You know, you might have written something with them in it and it doesn't feel like your best work or where it really could have ended. It's okay to like grab those characters back up and use them.
Well, I mean, usually a story is like contained as like this character doing this thing, this moment in their life. And then you might say, yeah, but what happened after that?
Yeah.
I have a series of short stories where it's the same two characters. I originally had an idea for a whole story that was like a whole bunch of events. And I was thinking I was going to make it into a play. It wasn't even a novel, but I decided to split it up into like different stories. So I've written two of those. It's the same characters, but they're each in my mind after contemplating this for, oh man, too long. Almost 2 decades, I want to say, that I've had these ideas. Yeah. But this is like just the different moments of this character that make stories.
Yeah.
But they're separate stories now. They just happen to have the same character in them.
And of course, like there's something about like a James Bond character where the character themselves just invites sort of like repeat scenarios. You know what I mean?
Episodic TV is all this, right? You know, MacGyver.
Yeah. Yeah, like any detective thing where it's formulaic, but that's also the only thing the character would be doing. Yeah. You wouldn't get it like an episode of Law and Order SVU where, well, and they have done this, where it's just about the characters. You get really upset about it. You're like, no, I'm here for the case. I'm here. I want them to solve another case. And if they can't solve another case, I want them to learn something about themselves. That I'll settle for as long as there's murder. Yeah, I guess I was excited to see what would happen. And then, like I said, this was not a scene that was included in the book. So it's also for me like evidence of the fact that these are just characters that you could write about forever. There could be three sequels and it follows them throughout their life and it's hit or miss and you would gobble it all up because it makes for that kind of like interesting writing. I think especially when it comes to like romance, this is what everyone hopes for. What is he thinking? Here it is.
Yeah, he's imagining you naked.
Yeah. Oh, you're crying in the car? Well, sorry. He's picturing you naked right now. Literally the ending of the story. You're right, John. John's like, and if you want some insight into the male psyche, well, he's picturing you naked. John's like, I could write romance.
This is easy.
Yeah, she was crying and pouring her heart out to him, and he couldn't help but think, what does she look like naked?
My takeaway is about, literally, my takeaway, I already wrote this story where you have the alternating perspectives. And this isn't something I'm going to learn from the story. This is something like I think about all the time, but this story is just such a good example of that. I want it to be my takeaway from the story is just understanding how perspective controls stories. And like, if you want to highlight something that's external to each character, but related to their internal thoughts and feelings, then you have to jump between them. You have to show both of them because the thing that the story is about is encompassed by both of them. So understanding that kind of thing in order to direct how you tell your story is important for the storytelling process. And that's my takeaway.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Thanks, guys. If you enjoyed this episode, consider joining our Patreon. Your support helps us keep the show running. Find out more at patreon.com/whyisthisgoodpodcast. You can also subscribe to our monthly newsletter at napleswritersworkshop.com.